way or fear of you or anything.
I have a most interesting subject to discuss with you this morning. The singing ministry of our Lord and Savior. When we were children in Sabbath school.
Oh my goodness, we're back, everybody. Welcome to the Fundamentalists Podcast. My name is Elliot Morgan. I'm here with my podcasting partner, Peter Rollins. I am a stand-up comedian and internet entertainer person, and Pete is a philosopher and a writer and a speaker, and we have a podcast where we dissect certain things about life, and we try to look at it in a unique, fun way, using philosophy and psychoanalysis and irreverence of all kinds. The order of service is as follows. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to tell you guys what's going on. We're going to tell you a little bit about what's happening in my life. And Pete's going to take that. He's going to extrapolate it. He's going to dissect it. And he's going to use his knowledge to try to add something fun to it. And hopefully, in the midst of that, there's some relatable tidbits that you enjoy as a listener. As always, the podcast is brought to you by Wink, or try wink.com/thefundamentalists. That's W-I-N-C if you are into wine and you would like to check it out. They have a palate tester that you can find out what kind of wines you like based off of this quiz that you can take. And they'll ship you wines monthly or just once if you would like. And they're really cool looking and very hipstery and neat, and you can look like you know what you're talking about with wine. And it also helps us buy maybe spit guards or something, or whatever, the foam mics. Things. Yeah better
actually,
mics.
Somebody sent us spit guards, which is really kind of them, but really? We don't have anything to connect them to, so we're going to have to buy some new.
I see. I thought, okay, I meant just the foam.
The foam bit. Oh, yeah. No, that's way above our pay grade. Oh, by the way, I'll tell you something I like about Wink. This is just a little bit of extra promo.
Please.
Is because if you're ever going out to someone's house, instead of, you've always got a bottle of wine to bring. You know,
yeah,
you've got
nice.
Like cool bottles of wine. So you can drink them at home, or you're running out to see a friend, you grab a bottle of wine.
Yep.
It's always going to look and taste great.
It really does. Yeah, that's actually really good.
That's why I like it. That's my thing.
That's the most.
If only I went out to people's houses.
You did last night.
I
did.
I know. Thank you.
It took a little bit of like.
You did have to push me a lot.
Yeah.
Not because I didn't want to go out, because actually I really love the people we were seeing, but I was just in my dressing gown.
Yeah.
After sitting by the pool.
So, yeah. You'd had a big day.
I had a big day.
So we've been kind of absent and we've been kind of lazy, which is exactly what you want to do when you're planning a live event, which is going to be on August 29th in Los Angeles, California. It's at Central Avenue Church in Glendale specifically. And to get tickets for the first ever live Fundamentalists, you can go to peterrollins.com. Peter Rollins used to be peterrollins.net, right?
Yeah, and then I went up a grade.
Good for you. Yeah. Good for you. But you can get it there.
Well, .net still works. If people, for moral or legal reasons, can't do .com,
good for them.
PeterRollins.net will still work.
Far more ethical.
Yes.
It's going to be a great show. We're going to have special guests. We're going to have some beer. We're going to have some wine, probably from trywink.com/fundamentalist. And it's going to be a really good time. And tickets are selling quickly. So if you would like to come, definitely do it. There's all sorts of like things you can get with it, and I think we're gonna do a live podcast. There's gonna be a little stand-up comedy. You're gonna be speaking a little bit.
Yeah.
And
we tried to you know, for $20 we wanted to make it really good value. So for $20 you get free drinks.
Yeah
so, and everything else.
Yep.
You get
exactly.
To hear us live.
Yeah, and then we punish you, so it all comes out balancing. Anyway,
I'm hoping it's going to be like the next TanaCon.
Yes.
I've been quite obsessed with TanaCon, I gotta say.
Great segue, Pete. One of the reasons that we've been kind of late on the podcast is I've been kind of on like this weird sabbatical where I've gone from VidCon, which is always this weird summer camp experience, to just sort of a week of pre-vacation, and now a week of vacation, and now I'm in a week of post-vacation, which is when I recover from weeks. So it's basically a full month of me that I do kind of every year. But one of the things that happened at VidCon was this particular girl, and her name is Tana something or other, Mongu or something. Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure.
Mongu. She's a YouTuber who I'd never heard of prior to her making this really big video about VidCon. And for those of you who don't know what VidCon is, it's basically Comic-Con for internet creators. In other words, it's a gathering of fans and digital entertainers and friends, and we all gather in a hotel, and there's, you know, it's Comic-Con, there's panels and all this fun stuff and meet and greets, and it was a really great experience. But they have a reputation sometimes of not inviting people who can sometimes be problematic, and that they have massive hordes of fans, and that causes security problems. And so for logistic reasons, I guess sometimes they don't invite these people. Maybe it's not a branding thing. I don't really know, don't really care. But she made this big video about it. She said that she was sort of outed from the group, and she felt very bad. She felt very angry about it. And so she decided to throw her own convention called TanaCon. And Tana is a huge YouTuber who, the fact that I never heard of her just speaks to the overall size of the industry. And I apologize if it sounds like I'm talking so fast that it's hard to like keep up with what I'm saying, but I promise that it's vapid and simple enough that it's not going to be like too complex. But basically she did this convention at the exact same time of VidCon, next door to VidCon, sold like 5,000 tickets, and it was an actual disaster. People were stuck outside. It was this whole thing. It was an embarrassment. There was a lot of safety issues, and it became this very dramatic thing where the idea is that it was going to be a spit, you know, spitting in the face of VidCon, and basically it was sort of like a puppy dog kind of trying to like claw at the bulldog, where it's like, you know, it's adorable. But anyway, it was a source of, you know, fun drama, like just sort of silliness. But then in the wake of all that, everyone now is making sort of these like, what was TanaCon? What is this? You know, who is this person? How did they do this? Is this fraud? Is this a conspiracy? Is this all these things? And a creator who I really like, his name is Shane Dawson. He is super into conspiracy theories. And he basically did this sort of Making a Murderer or, this true crime doc series on what the deal is with Tana and what the deal was with TanaCon, because he went and he never goes to these things. And it was a fascinating, kind of honestly a very beautiful series of videos that Shane did on this thing. And even
if you watched them, they were really good.
They're amazing. Yeah. And even if you weren't there, if you don't know anything about these people, Shane is an excellent creator person. And so anyway, I'm watching this stuff and it sort of sucked me into Shane's stuff on the YouTube algorithm. And so like, because I don't watch a ton of YouTube, clearly, if I don't know who half these people are, but I watched some Shane stuff, and then some other stuff from Shane started popping up in like my suggested videos, and one of them happened to be this thing on conspiracy theories. And I love conspiracy theories. I'm super into them. Not super to the point, we'll talk about this, but like I enjoy them very much. I think they're so cool. So point being, I'm pretty sure Mattress Firm is laundering money.
There's, for the devil.
For the devil, for Satan.
Yeah, for Satan.
All money is money for the devil. I think there's something going on with Pizzagate. I don't know what it is. Still going to get to the bottom of it. Pretty sure we landed on the moon. And it's so...
But the Earth is flat.
The Earth is flat.
Yeah.
The Earth is flat. The flat Earth
is... It's not flat. It's a dome. There's a curvature.
Yeah.
But it's not round. Course. Yeah.
Well, don't be absurd. Of course, there's a curvature.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's mostly flat. That's such a funny thing, too. Every argument for the flat Earth thing is like, well, if you look at how come you can't see a curvature? It's like, what if you're just on a flat part? Like, who told you? At what point did they... Anyway. Like, there's... like, a flat... You know what I mean? Like, it's not... We're on a rock. We're not on a ball.
Oh, yeah.
We're on a rock.
Yeah. That makes sense.
If you're on a rock, there's going to be parts that aren't perfectly spherical.
Well, here's the thing, right? Because we all know that you're not a flat earther, so we can pretend, but you are convinced by other ones. So, like, you really are mental.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I honestly don't know if I'm convinced by any of them.
Yeah.
You
enjoy them. Everyone enjoys them. Everyone enjoys them.
I love them. I mean, it's like... Give me when there's a new one or one that like you, the Berenstain Bears. You know about this one?
Oh yes, that's a good one. You told me about that. Oh. Yeah, you introduced me to.
Oh, guys, please don't stop listening to this because it's going to get way more interesting than most conspiracy theory discussions, I think. But definitely when you're done, check out the Berenstain Bears thing because it is.
Yeah,
it's that's a creepy one for sure.
Yeah, that is a creepy one. I told you, I introduced you to the Titanic conspiracy last night. We talked about that.
We watched the Titanic conspiracy theory video from Rhett and Link, who
very
are
good.
The two best.
They were very
the two
good.
Best YouTubers in existence right now, did a video that was very funny about the Titanic conspiracy theory. That
I put you up there, but I think they're fantastic. But so is Valley Folk and
thank
what you do. So
it's going very well right now. Yeah. We're really excited. The pilot that we just released is doing well. And our buddy Phil DeFranco gave a very nice shout out to us, and it seems to be we're doing some cool stuff. I'm really excited.
I love
about
Phil
it.
DeFranco. I love his work. You know, you've introduced me to all these interesting people I'd never have heard of.
Yeah,
otherwise.
It's interesting. Yeah, and it's interesting too to see sort of you can see when a shout out brings certain types of people because Phil has a very large, very particular audience, and YouTube is so weird because there's so many like creators and they all have different audiences, and then the goal is that you get other people's audiences and that you work with them and you collab and you do all these things. But when you do that, I know a lot of friends who it's like, who just, they'll go on a thing and they'll collab with somebody and then the audience will hate that person or they'll seek them out. They'll seek some sort of very vapid thing about them or, and this isn't what I'm talking about with Phil, by the way, this is a different thing, but it's somebody left a comment that was, I assume from that shout out, cause they had just seen our stuff and they called us, libtard cucks. Yeah. And I got, it was such a weird thing. Cause like, you're not supposed to ever respond to mean comments. That's sort of like the stoic thing that they say as a creator. It's like, oh, you just ignore them. But like,
it's too much fun not to. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's too much fun not to. And I literally was like, I'm going to write this thing and then post it just to make noise. And it was really fun. But anyway, let's talk about conspiracy.
Yes. So that's the theme. So all of that introduction was to say, let's talk about conspiracy theories.
That was 10 minutes.
That was good. Yeah. I liked it. I was drawn in.
Sorry, folks, but yeah, I had to get it all out.
You didn't say very much about the mattress one, but you just mentioned it. And I think that's a real good one. You just introduced that to me yesterday.
Okay. Let me explain
before
the
we get into the theory of it all. Just that's a good one.
Okay. Here's what I love about the mattress firm one. Like, duh.
Yeah.
Like it's not even, it's not like lizard people, you know, where it's like so absurd that you don't believe it. It's like, oh, how did we not notice that there's so many mattress firms everywhere? And so basically the conspiracy theory is like these towns where there'll be like up to 20, but sometimes like, you know, just like three mattress firms within like a 2-block radius and no one's ever in them. And everyone has heard of mattress firms. I grew up around mattress firms. How often do you buy a mattress? How often do you, with the proliferation of things like Casper and Lisa and like the direct-to-your-door mattresses, who's buying mattresses? And then this, apparently they got caught for like money irregularities, like financial irregularities, and then their CEO went to prison for fraud. And so the whole thing is like, is this mattress firm company in a giant money laundering
thing? I mean, as soon as you told me it, it kind of like it was funny because I remembered the last time I was in a mattress store, which maybe was 20 years ago, but I remember this cavernous room with like hundreds of mattresses and about 5 or 6 salespeople. Mm-hmm. No one in the shop. Yeah. None of the salespeople cared about, you know, selling a mattress really. And so, I wondered why I was even there myself. I think I wanted a mattress, but I didn't buy one because it was like, it was the least shop you could ever enter.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd never, so as soon as you told me, I was like, oh yeah, how do they make money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Selling, and if they're not making, if they're making an hourly wage, they can't be making commission because they don't care about selling them.
Yeah.
They're not trying to like, it's not like a car dealership where they're like, please buy this car. You walk in and they're like, here's 500 mattresses that are all like $4,000.
Yeah.
So you sell one mattress, and it's four. You get to mark that you sold $4,000 worth of stuff. It's fun.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
This is from the H3, by the way. I don't Ethan Klein and
another podcasters I love. Yeah, very good. Well, okay then. So let's step in. Will we talk about it?
Let's step into the quagmire.
Wow. Because the thing I wanted to talk about, there's three questions I want to kind of look at, and we may not get to them all, but. One is, what is a conspiracy theorist? Not what is a conspiracy theory, you know, we know all that, but what is a conspiracy theorist? Someone who is prone to believing in conspiracies. Because we all believe in some conspiracies, you know, some of them can be quite plausible, but a real conspiracy theorist, what are they? Two, what makes someone prone to be one? And then thirdly, how can you protect yourself from getting too drawn into them? So we may not get to them all, but I want to talk about the first one first.
Okay, great.
See where we go, which is, what is a conspiracy theorist? So I was thinking about this morning. It's like, okay, I think there's three basic elements. The first, for a true conspiracy theorist, is the idea that there is some sort of malignant, all-powerful entity that's pulling the strings of reality. Now, like effectively all powerful, it might be, you know, a supernatural thing, or it might be an individual,
aliens.
Or it might be, you know, a small group of Jews, or it might be a small group of Freemasons, or it might be the deep state, a group that exists behind the political powers you see. So effectively all powerful, malignant force that pulls the strings of reality. Two, that you cannot directly perceive this entity. You can only indirectly perceive it through the fingerprints it leaves mm-hmm. on the realm of appearances. The
world, it's non-falsifiable.
Yes. Yeah, but this, for the conspiracy theorist, it's not something that you can... You can have evidence for it, but the evidence is always indirect.
Yes.
You see the footprints and the fingerprints.
Which is why you can't discount it, because the yeah.
Yeah. And then thirdly,
or you can't disprove it
yeah.
because all the evidence is right. Or am I? Kind of,
yeah,
I'm taking what you're saying and injecting. Okay.
Well, no. The only reason why I'm hesitating is because I don't want to. I kind of like, because also that's what a detective does. A detective goes, the criminal is not someone you can see, but you can kind of tell by the fingerprints they leave who they are. So you know that's the way all detective work happens.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, that you have. You suffer from certainty. You have absolute certainty that this entity exists. So, you know, when you have those three elements, I'd say you are suffering from being a conspiracy theorist. So it's all-powerful malignant entity behind the realm of appearances, not directly perceivable, but indirectly you can see its fingerprints. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, you have absolute certainty that this exists beyond the evidential basis.
It seems like in the order of importance, the certainty would be the most important.
Yeah.
You kind of start with the belief that there's something, and then all that indirect evidence points to it.
That exactly. Absolutely. And that's why like natural theology has got the same structure. So for a natural theologian, they believe that there's an all-powerful entity in the universe, a benign or benevolent entity. But secondly, you cannot directly see that entity. You can only perceive it indirectly through the world of appearances.
Yeah.
And thirdly, the natural theologian...
How can you not believe in a God when that sunset is...
Yes, and like, you know, why is there, you know, if there's cause and effect, there has to be a first cause, you know. If there's movement, mm-hmm. there has to be a first mover, all of that. And then thirdly, natural theologians tend to have a certainty, a commitment to that belief that transcends the empirical evidence. This is why Zizek says that Columbo is a type of Aquinas. I don't know if you've seen Columbo, because he comes in.
Lost me at Aquinas.
Aquinas is a natural theologian of sorts. But Columbo immediately knows the criminal. So the criminal in Columbo is obviously an all-powerful entity who pulls the strings of the scene.
Gotcha.
They control the scene. They control everything. They've got everything under control. Columbo sees immediately who it is. Then all Columbo has to do is find the evidence to back it up.
Interesting. And he starts the Columbo, the show itself, he knows immediately who it is.
Immediately. He walks onto the scene, and usually there's some little tiny thing that helps him know, but it's like a supernatural thing. Like he knows who did it. He doesn't suffer from any doubt. He has absolute certainty. He knows who did it. And then he shows the evidence. So kind of that's the structure of a conspiracy theorist.
Okay, cool.
Which is why... I don't think you're a conspiracy theorist.
I'm definitely not.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Don't worry. I'm not plagued by much certainty.
Yes.
That right at the top, I'm like, I'm good there. There's no... I think it just in my own mind so thoroughly skeptical that the idea of believing in a conspiracy theory is almost a goal. Like, I almost think it seems like a cool idea to be like, really? You really think...
That's why neurotic people are so taken in by conspiracy theorists, because exactly that is the amazement of like, you actually fully believe this. It's so foreign to a neurotic's experience that it's like, and it's almost enviable.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like I have so much doubt about who I am, what I should be doing with my life, where I'm going. And there's someone who absolutely believes something.
That the earth is flat.
Yeah. And will give their lives to that.
How beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, what a dumb, beautiful thing.
Yeah. And that's the majority of people who watch YouTube videos are not people who are conspiracy theorists, but people who are intrigued and entranced by the certainty of the conspiracy.
Yeah. I wonder, too, if there is certain things. I wonder if it's like you could almost retroactively, because, you know, we've talked a little bit about beliefs being objective and not subjective, and sort of like, you know, you have your thing where you're like, I don't know what I believe. You know, it could be this, it could be that. You know, it's hidden to us. It's not apparent. And I wonder if you could almost retroactively discover certain, like, I feel like you could retroactively discover certain beliefs that you may have just by way of what conspiracy theories you tend to kind of give credence to.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I, for one, I think if I did have a certain belief, it's that I think that like there are evil, evil people. And I think that that is like, for me, that's like, well, that's just a given. There's evil people. Like there, the world is filled with beautiful things and it's filled with evil things and like all that, you know, and it's a very kind of, there is kind of a, maybe not moralistic, but a binary belief there where it's like, there's good and there's bad. And so therefore the conspiracy theories that I kind of tilt my head to a little bit tend to be ones that the certainty required is that there are evil people doing evil things. And if I start there, then I can go, okay, yeah, these seem a little, this seems a little shady. This seems, maybe they are lying to us. Maybe they are, because people I don't trust, but I definitely don't trust people to be smart enough to pull off the conspiracies.
That's what I was about to say, is the issue for a conspiracy theorist is not only do you have to think, you know, there's evil and there's malicious intent out there, but also that malicious intent has an almost all powerful strength, and that and a competence that is like that beggars belief.
What does that say about somebody psychologically to be like, you're giving so much power to the idea of this being this evil person or this like all powerful force? Like you're not only giving them like a morality or an immorality or like a motivation, but you're also giving them so much credit, like to give, like it's such a weird, there, it's the word that is coming to my mind is there's a bit of like weakness in that and being like, oh, look at these, I'm just like, I'm a pawn, and I could, but I guess maybe it's not weakness because they get strength from the idea that they're seeing through the curtain and and that they're privy to inside knowledge.
Yeah, and that is the question which I, you know, we'll probably talk about, is what is it that makes someone prune to thinking there is an all-powerful presence? Because it's not actually to do with intelligence. You find very intelligent people who are prone to that and not. I think it's to do with paranoia. So we have to talk about what a paranoid person is. But a good example.
Why do you want to talk about that?
I had a fascinating experience of the incompetency of power just last week.
Oh, let's dive into it.
Which is a good example of, because I am actually, I can be a citizen of three countries.
Congratulations.
So I can, British, Irish, and American. So I'm applying for my American citizenship so that I can have all three, which is, it's a useful thing to have.
So if you're Irish, English, and American, that means you're drunk, prideful, and repressed?
That's beautiful. That's beautifully said.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I combine those virtues well.
Yeah.
I applied. I went for my interview. And two interesting things happened. First of all, I have a green card. So the reason why I'm in America is I got a green card, and it's not connected to, first thing about that is they messed it up. So on my green card, it says that I was born in the United States.
Congratulations.
So thank you. Which means like if you're born in the United States, you do not need a green card unless you like renounce your citizenship. So like, first of all, like this incredibly difficult thing to get where you think that this goes through so many security checks and, you know, double, triple, quadruple checked. Complete mistake on the front. And I find out that happened to thousands of people with green cards. And every time I cross the border, I'm like, oh no, I wonder if they're going to make a deal with this.
Yeah.
So first of all, they make a basic mistake like that. And then secondly, I have a green card that's connected to skill, not to a job or anything. Mm-hmm. So a skill set. So when I was in the interview, they asked me, right, you know, this is an ability related green card. What is your ability? And they said, because they had written down.
Whoa, I didn't know you were going to be stumping me with these these difficult questions.
These difficult questions.
I thought I just had to say who the vice president was. I didn't know I'd have to tell you what my skill set is.
I had to do that.
I wouldn't
as well.
Be able, if a government official was like, what's your skill? I would be like, what are you, I would be like, I have no idea, I have none.
Well, here's the thing, but they're just testing whether what you say is what they have down, because that's already
they're just
been
verifying.
Done.
Okay. Verifying.
But this is the interesting thing, because the skill that they had written down for me was that I was in distribution in sales and marketing.
Right. Nice,
so
nice.
I was like, that is definitely not my skill set.
You know? I like that you didn't even, was there even a moment where you were like, that's it. Just pass
me.
It through.
Just
did you, but you didn't even like, did the thought of lying occur to you at all?
No, I just laughed. I was like, and so did she was like, oh yeah, no, it's a total mess, you know? And I was like, okay, like we sometimes think that there are these forces that are so competent and powerful, but behind the scenes, it's a mess. I have a friend, he's incredibly high up in the British Army, or he was a colonel in the British Army, and he said, yeah, it's a total shit show.
Yeah.
You know, that's why he actually really likes the movie, the Sicario films, because a lot of what you see in Sicario is just governments fucking up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it is. We think that there are these we have a fantasy, and that's what I want to get into, is why do we have a fantasy that there is some all-powerful entity in control, when the truth is most things are absolute mess?
It reminds me a little bit about the Benghazi thing, the Benghazi like Hillary Clinton thing, which I've gone back and forth with family members, and there's like this, you know, the idea that there is a master sort of conspiracy to kill off soldiers or something like that, and I'm like, I don't know, seems like maybe we don't know what we're doing all the time.
Yeah, and there's lots of antagonisms and people doing different things, and like terrible things happen, but most of it's miscommunication. Like, I was part of a conspiracy theory. I was there was somebody out there who created a conspiracy theory that I was a part of, and it was amazing that how much they fantasized that there was a massive organization behind me and some of the people I work with, and all of the interesting kind of things that we were doing. Like they painted us like we were villains in a Bond movie. It was it was quite incredible.
Can you talk more about that? Are you able to speak about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's still out there. The only thing I feel bad about is I think the person's probably, you know, suffers a lot from, you know, paranoia. So I was like, I wouldn't want to, like,
you want to out them.
Yeah, and also, you know, yeah, I mean, but, you know, if somebody wants to do a search, I'm sure they could still find...
What did they think you were doing? What did they think you were up to?
There was, like, a big organization that was... And it was all connected to usual stuff, connected to hiding abuse, defending kind of guilty people who are, all
covering up other atrocities.
For money, because we were, like, you know, being paid off, and... Because we were speaking at certain conferences, and we wanted to speak out against abuse, but we couldn't, because, you know, it would turn off the money flow. And, you know, it was quite funny to actually be part of a conspiracy theory and see how it works.
Yeah.
From that side.
And just for any listeners out there, I live with Pete. If you're looking for somebody with a diabolical plan, he does not have it. You have to have a plan before it can be diabolical.
I'm not even getting the first level here.
Yeah. That's so cool, man.
Yeah.
Dude, my buddy Joe had this repeated contact with someone who was convinced that he himself was speaking to him and taunting him through the videos. Oh, yeah. And this is years ago, but it was really kind of scary for a while, and Joe has a tendency to you know, he'll take things on. He took it very personally, and I was like, this is hilarious.
Yeah,
like,
I know. I had someone who thought that I'd broken into their house, got their computer, stolen their passwords so that I could read their private blog, and then secretly write responses to that blog in my books and online articles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a paranoid structure.
Ugh.
You know?
That's so just a lot.
I mean, I did do it, but that doesn't mean it's not paranoid, because I very much covered my tracks.
Mm-hmm. And it's always easy to confess things if you do it jokingly. So I see what you just did there.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And that's, we live in goofy times.
Yeah.
There's a paranoia that happens, and there's this whole thing of, like, you know, for me, I definitely know it's a belief that people aren't always good, but then also weird things happen and people do lie and they cover things up and people also are insane. Like, there's no... Sometimes when I was talking, this is going to be a really roundabout way of making this point, but sometimes when I get a certain amount, if I'm relaxing in the evening and I become a certain amount of intoxicated, there is a clarity that happens where I realize that what I'm attempting to do with my life on a professional level is insane. And like, I will look around and I just, it, like, the math clicks into my real logic brain, and I go, this isn't gonna work. And we were talking about this last night with the friends we were hanging out with. We were like, you're doing okay, and like all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, I guess, but there's still this thing where it's like, that's not really, it's all gonna crumble, it's all gonna go away at any point. And so that happens for me, and it's, but I'm still, even though logically this thing has, if you look at logic and you look at like probability. Mm-hmm. Many actions don't make sense all the time. So I wouldn't put it past human beings to conspire to do things. I myself have conspired with people on a interpersonal level within my social circle. Why? And we talk a lot about the going from the individual sort of interpretation of psychoanalysis to the societal psychoanalysis where societies themselves can sort of act in ways that are very Freudian or whatever. Why then would that not apply to conspiracies? If I myself can conspire, if that's a result of psychoanalysis, why would I, and I'm out here doing something very illogical and haphazard, why would that not apply to conspiracy theories?
No, absolutely. And that's why I want to make a distinction between believing in certain conspiracies, because of course governments.
I see. Yep. Because like, you're talking about conspiracy theorists. Yes. Yep. You said it at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. You weren't listening.
I wasn't listening.
Yeah. No, but like, you're right. Like parents who say to their kid, you know, oh, you love Brussels sprouts. You really do. Oh, you're going to so love them. That is a conspiracy. Those parents have conspired together to manipulate your desire.
Because my kid is not going to believe. He's going to believe so many
weird things.
Innocent wrong things. He's gonna be filled with wrong fun facts.
I suppose that what you should play this game with some friends, and the one who has a child who believes something stupid for the longest wins.
Yeah.
So if you've got a kid who eventually is 18 and they think something bizarre like stars or I don't know, ash that come from fires, then you win. So you have to put as much crazy stuff into your kid as possible.
I still feel like I have those moments where I'm like at 31 where I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I thought that. I can't believe I believed that for a long time. That's my joke about the Clydesdale.
I know, that's a good one. Yeah.
And things that you believe. But anyway, that implies that I have to have kids around the same time my friends are going to have kids. That's probably not going to happen.
But so that point you're making is very important. Is there's loads of conspiracies. There's lots of things that go on. But I think you are structurally speaking like prone to conspiracy, because if you're a conspiracy theorist, you're kind of prone to it. So what makes you prone? And the three things I think are that, you know, you're prone to thinking there's an all-powerful evil entity, you're prone to thinking that is not directly observable, and you're prone to having absolute certainty about it. If you don't have those three, you're just interested in conspiracy theories.
On a like, what's the need that is fulfilling?
This is interesting, right? So what is that like?
Welcome back to the fundamentalists.
Oh yeah. So one theory on this, I think it's quite and I'm going to, you know, paint it really in a very rough way, but is when you're an infant, you are incredibly close to your primary caregiver. So you're often your mother. So it's called the maternal function, but it doesn't have to be your mother. But you're feeding off the breast of this person. You were born from their womb, and what happens eventually is you start to differentiate. This is called the paternal function, but it doesn't have to be a man or a father. It can be anybody, but something gets in the way of this relationship between you and your mother. So you separate. Now then, the issue is if there's a problem with the separation, a failure of this function, paternal function, the idea is that your subjectivity doesn't fully form. Your ego doesn't fully form. So you might suffer from out-of-body experiences, from fractured sense of self, from not knowing where you start and where you stop. So psychosis, really. So psychosis kind of results from this over-proximity of the other, which means that you're overcome sometimes with voices, with desires that are in you, but that aren't yours. So you feel, you know, out of control. And the idea is that someone who has had this problem in infancy is going to be prone to feeling that there is this all-powerful entity that is in control of everything. Because that's, in one sense, your earliest experience of your primary caregiver, is they are this omnipotent being. When you separate from them...
Oh, interesting. You are then seeking the omnipotence again, right?
Here's the interesting thing. For the psychotic, you're not. For a perverse subject, you are. But for a psychotic, here's the problem. If you don't differentiate from your mother in an appropriate way, then the benevolent omnipotence turns into malignant omnipotence, because it threatens your subjectivity, your sense of self, your ability to act and interact. You feel that there's something in you more than yourself.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that goes back to there being the trauma of like subjectivity is when you realize that your ego is formed, and then you're differentiated from the whatever, and so you're no longer one with the universe, you then have this aching lack all the time. But what you're saying is, and that sounds very traumatic, and so traumatic sounds bad.
Yeah.
But in actuality, the worst thing is if, yeah, you don't go through that trauma. And what a beautiful metaphor for the idea of entering into suffering and doubt and unknowing, than to recognize that not doing it can actually be far, far, far more detrimental.
Far, far worse. Yeah, because like every parent probably feels the difficulty in every child of leaving your kid at the school on the first day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a trauma. But yeah, what's worse is that if you don't go through those types of differentiations and separations.
You get yourself a little milk toast boy. You get yourself a little... Little
what do you call it? I've never
milk
heard of
toast.
Milk toast. What's that?
It's like a term. I don't even know if it's used, but it was like a term. I've heard it before. Yeah, I really like it. I don't even know what it means.
Milk toast. Yeah, because it evokes something straight away.
It's like a skeezy little, you know.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's very good. That's why, you know, the old joke where they say Jesus was Irish because he lived with his mum till he was 30 and she thought he was God.
That's,
you know,
funny.
It's because old Irish thing of you're too close to your mother.
That's funny.
If in a sense you haven't differentiated, there are these interesting phenomena that are exactly the same as conspiracy theories. You feel an omnipotent power that is not benevolent.
Yeah, it's out to get you.
Out to get you, and is in kind of control of everything, mm-hmm. that you can't
separate
yourself from.
Movie stars and politicians.
And Illuminati and the Satanic Church or the Freemasons or, the
lizard
deep state.
People,
the lizard people, mm-hmm. And then secondly, it's... Again, you cannot see it because, in a sense,
Republicans.
Yeah, well,
9/11.
Yeah,
I think that wasn't that the whole 9/11 conspiracy.
Oh yeah, the truthers.
Yeah,
is that
they believe that there was a conspiracy to get oil or I don't know whatever it was.
Yeah, start a war and all of that.
Yeah,
that's a good example of a very big one. Well, I don't know if it was that big, but it definitely got.
Oh, the 9/11 is big.
Yeah, that conspiracy to truthers is big.
Yeah, that's a big one.
There was even a philosopher who was. One of the big people behind spreading that. He was not a very good philosopher, but it was interesting. Like,
was he not a good philosopher before he came public with that fun tidbit?
Yeah, I'd read him before, but that's the funny thing. But
you suck before, you suck after.
Yeah, but you can be super smart. That's the thing. Intelligence has weirdly nothing to do with it.
Yeah,
you can be super smart, and
it just happened to be that this guy was an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But yeah, so. If you haven't differentiated, one of the theories is that you will then be prone to doing this. And what the conspiracy theorist is trying to do is they are trying to instigate the break that didn't happen. So conspiracy theorists, it's an attempt to self-cure.
Mm-hmm.
It's an attempt to differentiate yourself from the all-powerful evil entity that seems to be threatening your world continually. That's why you shouldn't try to dissuade a conspiracy theorist, because it is an attempt at self-cure. They're trying to bring in the paternal function. So that's why a conspiracy theorist will be into some thinker who gives them all the data and all of the evidence. He's basically trying to expose this evil god and trying to take that evil god away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a conspiracy theorist. There's a reason why they're doing it. They're trying to instigate a sense of separation and autonomy and freedom from the sense that there is something
that
controls everything.
Upon reflection, I realized that I'm not maybe into actual conspiracy theories, but paranoia. There's probably a proneness that I have toward paranoia and a distrust of other human beings. And I don't know if that's the nugget of a conspiracy theorist, where it's just like, because I've brought up specifically in therapy, I brought up distrust with my therapist, and to the point where I literally thought at one point he was conspiring against me. And he did, of course,
denied it.
Of course, he denied it. Yeah. And actually, I think he said something like, I was like, I have a question for you. I was like, this is gonna sound weird. And he was like, huh. He was like, it was one of those things where he was like, how interesting that you're asking me this question right now. And he did his whole rigmarole. But there is a paranoia, I think, is a big part of it. And I don't know if that tied into the same thing structurally, so to speak.
I think only if. I think the certainty is such a big element, because neurotics and stuff we can all be paranoid a little bit, but it's the certainty. It's whether you know for a fact that your therapist is deceiving you, and every time he denies it, you know that that's just so that he can keep the deception going.
Right.
So it's some, like, I met a homeless person once recently, not that recently, but who believed that the CIA had put a chip in his teeth and was monitoring him. And it was the dentist who'd done this when he went in for a procedure.
That was the guy who would reach out to Joe. He would say, I know you've tapped my phones.
Yeah. That's it. Is that they are suffering from the tyranny of certainty.
Yeah. And then there's these people, we've talked about this before. I have people who are, they freak out. Like, they won't have Alexa in their home. Our place is bugged with 19. We invited this year. You have four Alexas. I got an Alexa in my bathroom. Like, she's probably listening to what I'm saying right now because I just said her name. But, like, it's also weird that I refer to her as just a person who can hear everything I'm saying. But I couldn't give two plan to put a chip in my teeth. Like, I don't care. I will. I'll send you. It's like anytime they're like, do you want to send your data to iTunes to help you or Apple to help us gather? I'm like, yeah, take it. Whatever.
You actually send your emails to the NSA.
I do.
Once a week. Compile them.
Yeah. I assume that there's like a guy named John. I go john@nsa.gov and I send it over. But yeah, I just couldn't. I could not care less about that particular type of thing. And there's an interest, we've talked about this with Todd McGowan in the book Who's Gonna Be at Wake, which is really freaking
cool. Excited about that. In
his, he's very into like the public sphere over the private sector or whatever, and one of the ideas that kind of blew my mind was the idea that the paranoia associated with, like, you know, government having your information and listening to your phone calls and all that stuff is actually like it's something in you that is drawn to the private sector that still believes that the private world is where your like safety is. When in actuality, it's like, you know, public is the way. I don't know where. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Can you say that better than I can? Do you know what I'm kind of getting?
Well, I can guess what he's saying by what you've said, which is, this idea that the place of subjectivity and selfhood is in some sort of internal subjective space that you have to protect.
Exactly.
Against,
yeah.
Yeah. Everything. So it's like, it's almost like I would know who you are if I could only hear your inner thoughts. There's an interesting thing here. Have you seen the movie What Women Want with Mel Gibson? Yeah. It's like where electric shock means he can hear what women want. The idea that your truth is in your inner mind or inner world, and if you can access that, you can get the truth. And that is a type of falsity in psychoanalysis because you don't know yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a misunderstanding of where the truth lies.
That's so cool. That's why therapy works. That's why going out in public and meeting up with friends works. It's why, like, you learn more about yourself when you're working on projects with people, when you're engaging with life, rather than staying at home and convincing yourself that, oh, thank God, no one knows that you're Googling whatever you're doing. Like, who gives a crap?
I know. The last person who knows what you think is yourself, really. Most of the time, we're amazing at hiding from ourselves.
Now, that sounds kind of conspiratorial.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like...
I think the ultimate conspiracy, which is the conspiracy theory against conspiracy theories, is that there is an organization in the government that creates conspiracy theories to keep the idea alive that there is an all-powerful agency that has control. And I think that's the conspiracy theory to end conspiracy theories, because it's kind of like a conspiracy theory has to have the idea that someone is in control. But, you know, this conspiracy theory is there's an organization that just creates them to give the illusion that there's somebody in control.
So good. Give me.
So that's a good short movie. Yep. There's a short film for somebody.
And then I want to know that the aliens planted the government officials to lie about the all, like, so the government, I want it to come full circle.
There is an ultimate organization behind it.
Yeah, I refuse to believe that it doesn't just keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so fun.
Because there's a worse trauma for us than there being an almost all-powerful entity out there who controls everything. And this sounds weird when you first say it, but the more terrifying thing is that there isn't anybody in control.
Right, and that, like, we actually have power to live our lives the way we want to live.
And that is, so, like, for the conspiracy theorist, the question is, do you ever get the feeling that someone's watching you? But the next level is, do you ever get the feeling that no one is watching you? Mm-hmm. And that is more terrifying. So, do you ever get the feeling that someone's watching you is scary. But actually, for most of us, do you ever get the feeling that no one's watching is even more frightening. But that, I think, is the way out of conspiracy. This is the way to kind of, like, break their hold, is to somehow see that, of course, there is evil and maliciousness and conspiracies, but that the idea that there is some group some small mega rich group or whatever, or lizards who control everything. It's like, even if there were lizards, they'd be just as rubbish as we are. Mm-hmm. They might be smarter, but they'd be making mistakes. They'd be, you know, lizard people are not perfect.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you're finally saying. I don't like when you get political, but I do. I don't mind you getting doing that. Let's talk about some of your favorite conspiracy theories. The Titanic one is fantastic.
Yes, and the main reason why I like that is just because the Titanic was built in Belfast, so it's a little, it brings me close to home.
Well, for those who aren't familiar with the idea of the Titanic, basically, the Titanic did not sink because the Titanic is fine. What they did was they took another ship called the Olympic that had been harmed. It got damaged. And they wanted to collect insurance money on it, but it was an old ship, so they couldn't do that. So they literally painted the word Titanic on it and then put a bunch of people who just happened to work for a particular company called J.P. Morgan.
And the enemies of J.P. Morgan. His rivals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looped them all into this ship, along with Hershey, some kind of Hershey, the enemies of Hershey or some kind of Hershey chocolate. Put them all in this boat, put Leonardo DiCaprio on there, put Kate Winslet, and then put the Phantom, or whatever his name is, Billy Zane on there, and they shipped them out, and then they ran into an iceberg, because like you can't see them. You can see them. They stick out of the water.
Yeah, massive.
It's a huge clue. It sank so they could collect the insurance money.
As if it was the Titanic, because that's a brand new ship, lots of insurance money. J.P. Morgan also gets rid of his rivals, his enemies. And then the Titanic continued to sail as the Olympic for many years until it was taken apart.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What kind of insurance company would insure a cruise ship?
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, that could be, like, I've heard that's the case, that it was insured in some, some massive insurance company, but, you know, I don't know. We have to look into
that's
that.
A lot of money.
Yeah. The reason why I think that this works as a conspiracy theory is actually the J.P. Morgan bit. It's like, all of it's a little bit unbelievable, but as soon as you get into the idea that some, again, very powerful, very rich individual can concoct this incredibly elaborate plan to get rid of some of his rivals. It's like, that's almost like supernatural power. Like the idea that somebody could do that. And that's why I think it has this, it's a true conspiracy theory in that it has, you know, people believe in it more than the evidence allows. And there is an all-powerful entity who is not directly visible, but whose fingerprints are on everything.
There's also something, I think, and this goes back to the Berenstain Bears and the Mattress Firm and like a lot of the Disney stuff that I'll really get into. J.P. Morgan, what I find interesting about the Titanic thing is when J.P. Morgan comes up, it makes me go, oh, I know J.P. Morgan, and that makes it interesting. Which, if you think about it in terms of like the appeal of the conspiracy theory being this sort of like omnipotent thing, and your ego hasn't fully formed, and or your subjectivity isn't all there, and so there's like this kind of like it would make sense that the conspiracy theories that are most palatable to people are the ones that they can have the most kind of like attachment to, because it kind of is about attachment, and it is about wanting to separate. So like when Berenstain Bears pops up, it's like, I remember Berenstain Bears. So and if you don't remember what it is, basically it's like this crazy thing where we thought it was called Berenstain Bears, and apparently it's Berenstain Bears, and it was always called Berenstain Bears, and they always said Berenstain Bears, but everybody remembers it's Berenstain Bears, whatever. Same thing with the Disney stuff. The Disney stuff is like, I love Disney. I grew up with Disney. I grew up going to Disney World. So when there's conspiracy theories that have something to do with something I can relate to, I'm like in immediately almost. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Let's hear it. Moon landing, 9/11. I remember 9/11, so I'll get super fascinated by that. Yeah. I will skip over the conspiracy theories that have nothing to do with me personally.
Like, yes, there has to be some connection psychically with you. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why I like the Titanic one.
Yeah.
And then I think for someone like you and for me, and a friend of mine who became a truther for a while, but only I think because he enjoyed it. But it's also because it's nice to, for someone who questions all the time, to kind of have a sense of certainty briefly.
Yeah, it's nice.
But the difference is, like, he after, if you questioned him enough, he would smile. You know, he was like, you could tell that he wasn't fully committed. Whereas if you're, I think, really structurally, as a conspiracy theorist, it's indubitable. It's utterly indubitable.
And you're right. Like, when it comes to my belief in any of these things, I don't know. Even worse, don't really care.
Yeah.
Like, if we faked the moon landing, All right.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. Good for you. But there are, speaking of conspiracy theories that, like, I think, because obviously the tendency is to be like, oh, it's all just a bunch of, like, people not, but the VW thing, where they lied about their emissions testing for a long time. I mean, that's a straight up conspiracy.
That's it. That's it. Like, that's why there's, like, so many real conspiracy theories. And like, the one, I don't know much about the whole shooting of JFK. It's not my history. I know a little bit, but I'm going, like, you know, there could be, you know, he could have been killed by, you know, forces within the American government.
I mean,
that's not, I don't think that beggars belief. So yeah, this is the distinction going, like, there are, I'm trying to think of a conspiracy theory that I actually think there's some truth to. I'm not sure if I just don't know that many.
What do you make of their need for you to believe it? And then, because I don't have a need for them not to believe it. It's a very one-sided relationship with a conspiracy theorist, because they're like, let me convince you.
Yeah.
Is there a need for people who feel a need to detach and separate themselves to also assume that others need that, or that they, or that in bringing them into their world, it also helps with their separation? Like, what's the, why is there a, why are they make these 20-minute videos, you know, like where they're trying so hard and they come public with their thing, and they have no problem, like, dying on the hill of a flat earth, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Cause there is this desire to convince. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, I'm sure there's a myriad of reasons. The first thing that comes to mind, but is that for a conspiracy theorist, they are so oppressed by this all present, all powerful force that I guess it's just, they just need to try to take it down. So the convincing is partly just part of what's helping them create a distance. The more people who know about it, the more people who fight against it. But I don't know if that's an adequate answer, but
it's interesting.
It's definitely a part of it. Like, they feel it's not just, oh, I believe there's a, because you could be a conspiracy theorist and still not care, you know, just go, okay, I know there's an all-powerful entity behind everything, but I'm just going to watch Netflix and masturbate and it's fine, you know. But that's not what this is, because it's, you are completely taken in by the need to get rid of this internal force.
It's like this, a fervency.
It's a fervency, because, and that's why it's self-cure. I mean, it's a ineffectual self-cure, but it is an attempt to concretize this all-powerful entity and to
concretize,
make it kind of
concrete,
real, concrete in some historical phenomenon, and then distance yourself from it and attack it. But it never works, because, of course, the entity is, it doesn't exist. It exists within you.
Yeah, the Holocaust is another fun one. The Holocaust was a hoax and all that stuff.
That's right. Yeah. That's a biggie. David Irvine's a historian who's very much behind the kind of, it's the Holocaust never happened.
I was into the simulation one for a while. I definitely still kind of toy with that one.
No, but you like all the ones that are really crazy, which means I think you just enjoy them as a comedian, because you like the Bernstein Bear one, which I don't know if anyone really believes. And you like simulation one, which I suppose some people might believe that one. But I think you just go for the really juicy kind of, like,
I don't know. I think I like all of them. I like them when they convince me, because I think that is, like, going back to, like, questioning a lot and having that, there is something nice to just like consciously being like, let's just say, like, for the sake of argument, let's just say we're in a simulation. That's kind of nice, you know, like, it means nothing too. Yeah. It's completely benign. Like, if we're living in a simulation, it makes no difference. And also it helps explain weird things that happen to me, because weird things happen to me, but I also probably invite that in some way. So,
and the simulation one, I mean, like, I know there are various versions of it, but in one sense, of course, this is a simulation in that, you know, we project desires, etc., on reality. We come from the ground evolution. So the simulation thing, all it does is presuppose a supreme intelligence kind of manipulating reality. But it doesn't really change much about, because you're still you.
Mm-hmm.
You still, even if this is a simulation, isn't that right? You're still
I'm still a free actor. And
it's just someone's playing Sims.
And what basically the internal antagonisms would be just sort of a product of me, a code or something that was implanted in me, and a chip that was in my the version of a chip in my tooth. Only it's, I care just as much about that as I do about there being a chip in my tooth. Like, I just don't care.
I mean, the thing as well, the thing that I love about conspiracy theories that I think you mentioned is that there is a real pleasure in something that seems not understandable making sense. So when you told me about the mattress shops, this weird thing that I'd carried around in a very tiny way, which was, that was a weird experience.
Yeah.
Suddenly made sense. And a lot for a lot of religious people, the supposed sense that a religious dogma gives you is pleasurable. There is a pleasurable element to sense making.
Well, I think that's kind of the reason this podcast exists. I mean, the best parts, my favorite parts of this podcast are when I say something and then you say something and then I go, oh yeah. Like I know that. And then that's like the revelation of some kind of truth. So I would venture to say that a lot of psychoanalysis, I mean, it's all trying to figure out human nature and like why we do, you know, what we do, but.
Yeah, all this weird stuff that we do. I mean, here's another weird thing, which you know, at first seems bizarre, but can be made sense of. Is you mentioned that it's like a lot of these conspiracy theorists who are acting the paternal function for a conspiracy theorist. So it's some guy on his computer who's talking about flat earth, and it's terrible production value. They're not a good communicator. They're all over the place. And yet still, they're massive, mm-hmm. right? Why is that? Why is somebody who maybe, there are intelligent conspiracy theorists and people who do have high production values, but it doesn't seem that important. There is actually a thinker, I won't mention his name now, but there's a thinker who's very big on the internet, and he's, I don't find him very convincing.
Yeah.
But as a symbolic figure, he's become such a symbolic figure that people fight for and against him. So mm-hmm. it's beyond what he says, which some of it's interesting, some of it's not so interesting, whatever, but he is no longer an empirical person. He is now a symbolic paternal figure, mm-hmm. which you kind of love or hate. And it's not really connected to how good he is. Just like your father empirically might be crap, but structurally, symbolically, they still function as a father. Or your mother might not be a nice person, but they can still function symbolically as a type of mother.
Yeah.
So the question is why do...
I thought you were, for a second, I thought you were referencing Alex Jones, but then I remember you said thinker, and I was like,
I haven't actually watched him very much. I need to watch him a bit, but he is
Very conspiracy theory. Yeah. They're given, making the... putting fluoride in the water that makes the frogs gay or whatever.
Is that right?
That turned the freaking frogs gay. And he says it with such certainty. It's like a
classic. If I was younger, I'd have a t-shirt. I'm sure people have a t-shirt with that on.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Make the frogs gay. It's like there's that classic one. It's not a conspiracy theorist, but you saw the one where about bananas. God, evolution's wrong because bananas are
shaped like a hand.
Yeah.
and they're perfect for like peeling.
Yeah, that was very funny. I've seen t-shirts with that.
Yeah. But I've heard that the banana,
the atheist's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. Explain this. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Cool, man. Well, let's dive into some takeaways. How do you feel about that? Anything else? Any other ideas?
No, I think we kind of like at least touch on it. The only thing I'm always nervous about is, of course, we're just, you know, like at a superficial level, you know. So, you know, if people want to go deeper in this stuff, there's lots of great books, lots of great stuff you can read and watch. We're just kind of introducing the subject.
Yeah, I think we'll probably talk about it more because it's so fun. Because it is such a phenomenon that like there's very few things in mainstream culture that I think invite people not in a non-threatening way to discuss psychology and like human nature. I find this in the other podcasts that I do sometimes, where it's like there's a dance you have to do in order to get people who aren't prone to thinking like this interested in it, and mm-hmm. it can create a very isolating experience sometimes. But conspiracy theories are, what I like about them is there seems to be this kind of like they bridge the gap a little bit because they're so silly sometimes that they can become non-threatening, and then you can actually discuss, like, I mean what we're discussing essentially is like Oedipal stuff and like Freudian stuff, but it's all in a way that is like, well, the earth is flat, and it's like you in discussing these like very silly things, we were able to touch on like very on things that we would otherwise not be able to discuss with somebody, because, you know, then they get all like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. But if you go, isn't it crazy, this flat earth guy, and then you're like, well, you know, I read this thing, da, 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 it's about, and then that makes them go, oh, what is my brain, what am I doing? Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, because it's a fascinating phenomenon, it's funny, it's interesting, but once you peel back, it's like, oh no, this can give you real insight into what it is to be human. And as you say, we touched on the paternal function, we touched on psychosis, paranoia, and it's like, oh, this opens up a whole pile of interesting things.
Yeah, that I think could bring That is so, it's, yeah, and then it goes back to kind of the Irish pub thing that you talk about of, like, you know, sideways getting into people's brains and, like, discussing things with them in a way that's not, like, antagonistic in any way. And the, you know, the Irish pub analogy of, like, you go there, you argue it out, you have a good time, you have a drink, and then you say, I'll see you tomorrow, whatever. It's like with a conspiracy theory, you meet at Flat Earth, and then you dive into all these other stuff, and it allows them to, like, not feel like you're trying to shove anything down their throat.
Yeah.
Because you have a common enemy too. You have a common enemy in the sense of, like, you know, look at these crazy people. Right? Yeah. And then so you have the other, and then that establishes a connection with the person that you can then actually discuss things with because they know they're on your side. Whereas if you come at them with anything other, it's fun. That's my takeaway, I think, is that I value conspiracy theories because they are a gateway drug to more fun, deeper conversations that can actually help people's lives.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, my takeaway is that there's kind of two things that we need to kind of try to do in our lives when we're separating from, you know, becoming an autonomous being. The first is, of course, you know, you separate from your primary caregiver. But what happens then is you can still feel kind of bad about it. Suddenly you look at the primary caregiver and you think they're a god, you think they're amazing, you think they can give you the answer. And then you maybe take that on to your other relationships. You think that woman or that man can be the answer to everything. So the second stage is, one, you differentiate. And then secondly, it's realizing that the other person is not a god. They are also riven with desires and fears and all of that. And so just in general life, if we feel that we are being caught up in and tyrannized by an over-obsession with conspiracy theories, is sometimes to try to realize that actually we're all pretty messed up. And actually realizing that and understanding that can free you from this. I call it the tyranny of certainty, because people think certainty is a good thing. Like, it goes like, oh, well, some people don't doubt. Some people have certainty and go like, yeah, absolutely they do. And that's even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think having doubts is bad, the really believing that the FBI is communicating to you through your Netflix movies is difficult. It's horrible.
Well, and there's also proof in the pudding a little bit in what you're talking about with, by the way, that was so funny in the Rhett and Link.
Oh, yeah, Rhett and Link did a very good job. Yeah, yeah, it's very good.
But in this podcast, you've made it clear on multiple points that believing in conspiracy theories does not make you a dumb person.
No.
Because paranoia and all these things and a desire to believe in these things runs the gamut of intelligence, because it's so much deeper than that. But I think that there is another type of certainty that non-conspiracy theorist people succumb to, which is, oh, those people are all crazy.
Yeah.
Those people are all dumb. And all of those conspiracy theories that they believe are all fake and made up, and they just need to believe that. And, and all that is just another light, albeit lighter form of certainty. So.
And if you're someone who, because this is the whole point, I think we come back to it again and again, that we all have weaknesses and struggles with stuff, but it manifests in different ways. But if you have a tendency to, you know, to conspiracy theorists, you can turn that into an incredible skill. Loads of the best journalists are people who have that tendency but have turned it into something really good, because there are so many things out there that need to be uncovered. So actually, it's an incredible skill. The only danger is if you know, get so caught up in it that you find yourself making videos every day about lizard people, then, you know, you're in trouble. But if you end up becoming an investigative journalist, you know, going to Somalia and doing some really interesting work about what's going on, then you've taken this potential weakness and turned it into a superpower.
Yeah.
So one of the smartest people I know has a tendency towards conspiracy theories, but he has also used it to write incredibly insightful essays and even books.
That's amazing. That's beautiful. Cool. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.